It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Our latest Wild Wondering West Virginia question is about the oldest mountains on the planet.
West Virginians live our lives separated by some of the oldest mountains on planet Earth. So when we actually go and touch some of these mountains with our hands, we're touching some of the oldest rocks in existence. And I think we take that completely for granted in West Virginia. We don't even know about it.
More about that question coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Governor Jim Justice has until midnight to sign or veto bills passed this session. Dave Mistich reports.
According to the legislature's website, Justice signed 44 bills on Monday. That's in addition to dozens of measures signed during and after the legislative session, which ended March 9th. Justice's chief counsel, Brian Abraham, says the process continues, and they're confident they'll make their way through all 294 bills lawmakers passed this session. He noted that many bills were delivered to the governor later in the year compared to prior years under the Justice administration. The West Virginia Constitution gives the governor 15 days from the end of the regular session, except Sunday, to take action on proposed legislation. Bills still become law without the governor's signature if he doesn't veto them. Some key pieces of legislation, such as exemptions to the Social Security income tax and a campaign finance reform measure, remain outstanding ahead of the Wednesday deadline. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown.
Included in the bill signed Monday and Tuesday are the last dollar in community college tuition grant program, reform to the state's foster care program, and expanding municipal home rule. Justice announced he has also signed a measure providing a banking solution for the state's soon-to-be-launched medical cannabis program. For more, visit us online at wvpublic.org. This morning, we'll continue to listen to our series from the StoryCorps Project, which visited West Virginia last year and recorded 109 interviews with West Virginians. One of the conversations was between Mike Friel and his friend and colleague, Deacon Stone. They spoke about Stone's childhood and what it was like to be estranged from his father and how it has influenced his own approach to fatherhood.
You've mentioned that you grew up an only child, a single mother. Did you ask your mother about your father? And if so, what would she say?
So Dad wasn't around. That's a nice way of putting it when I came up. The story was that when I was really, really little, he would come and see me. And she'd kind of like put her foot down, drew her line in the sand and said, if you want to be part of his life, commit to being part of his life in whatever way. And he always refused to. He just refused to commit to anything. He just wanted to kind of, as she would put it, have his cake and eat it too. And one day he came to see me and he knocked on the door and she didn't answer. And that was it. He never came back. That was it. Until I reached the age of 8. And I think looking back on it, it was more out of curiosity than anything. Why wouldn't you want to know, you know, who this human was that you create?
Tell us about that day when you were 8 and how it sort of transpired.
Mom was acting very awkwardly and put on different clothes than she might normally put on and put something nice on. We're going to go somewhere and eat. And going somewhere to eat is, you know, oh, are we going to get roast beef from racks and sit at the boat docks with the windows down? That was eating out. And I thought, oh, nice. We're going to go somewhere to eat. This must be a special occasion. And we get to McDonald's. And here's this guy. And we sit at the table with him. And she says, this is your dad. And I'm like, Oh, okay. All right, I see what's happening here. You know, I'm a little kid. I have no idea.
But you were excited.
I was excited, and he's like, "Well, hey, how are you?" And I'm like, "I'm good." It's like, "Well, you're growing up." Yeah, you know, like, Mom's like, "Is there anything you want to ask your dad?" And I sat there for the longest time, and I think the only thing I could muster was, "Do you have any pets?" And I don't even
know
if we had any pets. I don't recall. I don't think he did. It was just a very, very peculiar circumstance. So then we go to the flea market, and he buys me a dartboard They gave me the scroll with the book of Matthew written in tiny text and bolded in such a way that Jesus' face appears when you look at it. And he gives me a, gave me the dartboard, and he gave me $20. And I mean to tell you, I thought he was the most fantastic person in the universe. And here I am drawing crayon pictures, and he's supposedly traveling back and forth from Florida to Ashland, Kentucky, right down the road from us. And he's going to move back, and this is why Mom agreed to let him meet me. And, you know, in that process, I'm going back to Florida. I'm getting my stuff and moving back. And I'm drafting these letters, and my mom sees him, and she's like, you know, I really don't know. I don't know what's going to happen here. And I know she was trying to protect me, like, emotionally, because I was just overwhelmed at this larger-than-life imagined figure in my head. My dad was, now I had a connection there. And she was very judicious about it, but she asked me to kind of sit on the letters for a while. And I don't regret that, because I never sent those letters. And the funny thing was, he, at that time, wasn't moving back anyway. He had just told her what he needed to tell her to see me and get his curiosity out of his system, and that was it. I didn't speak to my dad again until I was in my 20s, when, again, out of curiosity on my part, I wound up looking him up.
So today, you're married to Jessica, and you have two children of your own. How do you think your background or the way that you were raised affects the type of spouse, the type of father that you are today?
I have doubts every day about being a dad, having never had one. And I know we all have different kinds of figures of influence in our life that don't necessarily directly advise the decisions we make and then the behaviors we have. But I have doubts every day, and I suppose at this point in my journey, I've leaned into it in the full understanding that I really think on the base level, none of us really know what we're doing anyway, but we are all at best doing our best. And that's been enough pressure off of the situation and enough consideration to it to make sure that I feel like showing up really is 90% of the game, you know, and I'm glad that I'm there for my kids. Do I always wish that, you know, I had some stellar example of how to be an awesome dad? I guess, but that's, you know, that's just imagination. Reality is I do my best every day, and I really hope that that's good enough. It's better than some I've seen.
That was Mike Friel and Deacon Stone from a StoryCorps interview recorded last fall that was recorded in Charleston, West Virginia. You can hear their conversation and more in a recent episode of Inside Appalachia. Find it at wvpublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Wheeling resident and entrepreneur Brian Joseph posted the latest question in our ongoing Wild Wandering West Virginia series. He asked us to tell the story of the oldest mountains in the world, the Appalachian Mountains, including the sister mountain range, the Atlas Mountains. This question won our online voting round, so we decided to visit with Joseph to gain a bit more insight into his curiosity. Glynis Board reports.
Joseph is an entrepreneur who has built a successful career turning Appalachian coal into material that is helping humans fly through the atmosphere and even reach into space. He loves West Virginia, and especially the Northern Panhandle, where he says there's a machine shop in the basement of a house on every block. Joseph believes geography plays an important role in shaping communities on many levels.
It defines how we live, what we do every day, defines the shapes of our roads. It defines the kinds of homes we live in, whether or not we have basements. It defines the work that we do. It defines how we recreate. It created us, right? And sometimes we forget. We think we are who we are, but remember even our state motto, Montani Semper Libri, which is mountaineers will always be free.
Given the chance, Joseph will happily rattle off a list of innovations and inventors from the region. And that spirit, he says, is shaped by the very old ground we stand on.
West Virginians live our lives separated by some of the oldest mountains on planet Earth. So when we actually go and touch some of these mountains with our hands, we're touching some of the oldest rocks in existence. And I think we take that completely for granted in West Virginia. We don't even know about it.
Understanding the lifespan of the Appalachian Mountains requires considering concepts like deep time, which is especially difficult for human brains to grasp. Consider that a bunch of millions of thousands of trips around the sun ago, all the continents were smashed together, and the Appalachian Mountains were like the Alps, reaching way, way, way up into the sky. Then, a couple inches a year, oceans grew between the continents. Now, that's tough to think about, especially since it was only hundreds of thousands of trips around the sun ago when we humans started traipsing around the remnants of these mountains, which, of course, have scooted all over the globe at this point, including, as Joseph points out, in Morocco.
So these are our sister mountains. They're called the Atlas Mountains. And it would be interesting to just sort of, I don't know, go there and just think about how the geology there and the geology here and the difference in the latitudes have created different lives, different worlds.
A trip to Morocco sounds like fun and is definitely cost prohibitive, but we're a creative group, us Appalachians here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Joseph points out that our ancient geology has pushed Appalachians to be creative, resourceful scientist types who, like the mountains themselves and like him, reach for the stars.
If you want to know more about how stars evolve, how the universe evolves, you got to listen to Stardate. Why is Stardate important? Well, because Harlan James Smith from West Virginia started it. He was he ran director of the McDonnell Observatory, and that's one of the things he did during his tenure, is starting Stardate, which I listen to on public radio all the time.
So stay tuned. We'll be working on crafting the story of the oldest mountains on Earth over the next several weeks. Hopefully, this will be fun. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.